Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Menachos Daf Lamed Zayin. Don't forget to click on the daf option in order to view a marked daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. As we turn toward the Gemara for today's shiur, we will be beginning on Daf Lamed Zayin, Omid Aleph, about 12 lines from the top, almost halfway down the page. During our last shiur, we spilled over onto this Daf, so for those who are concerned about the Daf Yomi schedule, we recommend that you listen to the end of the previous shiur in order to catch the upper part of this Daf. The reason for our spilling over is that we couldn't have cut off the topic in the middle with any degree of responsibility. In addition, we want to refine or add a certain dimension of explanation that in our previous shiur we did not include. And that concerns the explanation we offered concerning the Braisa, beginning with today's Gemara Tanya Idoch. The topic under discussion is a person with an amputated arm. The explanation that we gave in our previous shiur was based on the Yerushalmi that's quoted in the Shita Mekubetzes Ois Yud Dalid. If we briefly go over that pirush, that explanation, we will then add to that the explanation offered by the Tosfos, which is in disagreement with the approach of the Yerushalmi. So, turning to the Gemara, the last one on the line, Tanya Idoch, we're 12, 13 lines from the top. The Tanaic source says, Ein loy zroya, poter minat filin. If he is lacking a zroa, Tosfos himself explains in Dibur HaMaskil Kiboyres that the Zroa is the part of the arm from the shoulder till the elbow. So if a person is lacking that limb, so he is exempt from tefillin. Achirim Oimer, the Achirim say, Yodecha. This word Yodecha is from the Torah, and it's spelled with a hey at the end, and we learn from this l'rabois es hagidim, to include the gidim. Now the pshat we said according to the Yerushalmi in our previous shiur was that the achirim are disagreeing with the Tanakama and say that the person whose arm is amputated will place it on his right arm. So according to the Tanakama, there is an exemption. In other words, if you can't put it on your left arm, in this case he can't because it has been amputated, so he is totally exempt. There's no obligation on the right side. According to the Achirim, as we saw in the Yerushalmi, according to the Achirim, if he can't put it on the left side, he shall put it on his right arm. And of course, someone will help him in putting on the tefillin. According to the Tosfos, however, and this is the refined pshat or the added dimension that we didn't include in our last shiur, according to Tosfos, in the Dibur Masl it says, Ein lo zroa poter minat filin achirim omid yodcha v'chulei. Tosfos says, Mor omar chada umor omar chada v'loi pligi. That means you have a Tanakama. The first opinion in this source says one point. The achirim refer to another situation, and there is no argument whatsoever. We might point out that for further information on this topic, we recommend looking in the Shulchan Aruch and Mishnah Bura, Simen Chof Zayin, Sif Aleph, in the Ramah and the Mishnah Bura. Here, according to the Tosfos, the Tanakama is talking about a situation different than the situation of the Achirim. The Tanakama is talking about a total arm amputation, which includes, we'll say this is an amputation up till the shoulder. In such a case, there is total exemption from tefillin. No placing on right side. Achirim omrim yodacha l'rabbis is a gidam. This is a situation where a gidam, according to the Tosfos' pshat, is a person whose arm has been amputated from the elbow below. Namely, he has the section of the arm from the shoulder till the elbow. He still has that. Being that he still has that, the Torah is saying he is included in mitzvah tefillin, and he will put it on the, we'll call it the stump or the part of his arm that remains from shoulder till the elbow. In fact, that part of the arm is in general where the tefillin are placed. So you can see that according to this pshat, the Achirim are talking about a different case than the Tanakama, and hence, as Tosfos says, there is no argument between these the first opinion and the second opinion in this Tanaic source. Continuing in the Gemara, Tanu Rabbanan, Iter Maniach Tfilin V'Yamino Shuhu Smoilo. An Iter is what we call a left-handed individual. His main arm is his left. He's left-handed. So, a person like that, an Iter, he places his Tfilin on his weaker arm, just like the majority of the population that are called right-handed. They place their tefillin on their left arm, which is their weaker arm. The left-handed individual places his tefillin on his weaker arm, which is his right arm. So that this source that says Meniach Tefillin B'Yamino, that means on his, he will place his tefillin on his personal right arm. Shehu Smolo means his right arm is the weaker arm. Smol being a term used to refer to weaker. The Gemara asks, we have a brisa that seems to say otherwise. V'hot Tanya, this source also deals with what we think is at least an iter on the surface. The Gemara will refine afterwards, but for the time being, let's just assume that we're talking about an iter. So, and this source says Miniach b'smoiloi, he places it on his own left arm, shu smoiloi shel kol adam, which is the left arm of everyone else, namely on his real left arm. Omar Abaye answers that the second source, Ki Tanyahi, when this second brisa was taught, B'shevik B'shtei Yodov, it's talking about a person who is what we call ambidextrous. He has equal control over both arms, and as a result of that, he is categorized as a right-handed individual, and then therefore places his tefillin on his left arm. Tana de Bei Menashe. There is a Tanaic source that is the Bei Menashe teaches Al Yodacha Zu Kiboris. The pasuk that says that the tefillin are placed Al Yodacha, that is a reference to the bicep. The bicep is described as the tall part, the highest part of the arm, and we say highest not in terms of standing from ground to ceiling, but highest in terms of if one's arm is outstretched, so the muscle that appears there is the highest of the in an outstretched arm, that would be the highest point on the arm. Bein Einecha, which is also a reference to the Tefillin Shel Rosh, as the Al Yodacha obviously is the Tefillin Shel Yad, and Bein Einecha Zu Kodkoid, that has to do with the head, the skull. Hecha, where on the head? Amri de Beirav Yanai, Mokon Shemoichoi Sheltinoik Roifes. A newborn, one will notice with regard to a newborn infant, the top of his head, the skull hasn't fully joined together. So there's what we'll call, for the sake of simplicity, a soft spot on the top of the skull. There are, of course, proper medical terms that apply to that, but for our purposes, the mokum shel tefillin will simply refer to as that spot on the skull that on a child, on an infant, is the part where the different sections of the skull haven't joined together yet. Bo mine flimoi mei Rebbe. Flimo, the name of a scholar, asks a question of Rebbe. Before we go on in the Gemara, we have a topic heading in our Shas Ozer pre-marked Gemara that is the text we use for the Gemara marking system. We provide topic headings called Nosei in the outside margin, as well as Mivne, structural notes, when new geometric forms appear in a sugya wherein they are explained. Under, in this case, the Nosei, we have on the outside margin, Mi Shiesh Lo Shnei Roshim, an individual that's two-headed. We will see in the Gemara She'elas Flimo, Flimo's question, Be'ezem Ehen Meniach Tefillin, on which of the two heads does this individual put the Tefillin? And a second issue, Kamo Yitein Bepinyon Haben, let us say the father of a firstborn male child that happens to be born with two heads. How much does he pay for the redemption, for Pidyon Haben, for the to the Kohen upon redeeming his son? So in the Gemara, we have Flimo asking of Rebbe, Mi Shiesh Lo Shnei Roshim, Be'ez Mehen Meniach Tefillin, someone who has two heads, on which one of the two heads does he place the Tefillin? Omale, Rebbe reacts with a certain with a sense of exasperation to this question, and he says, "O kum goli, either you get up and go into exile, oy kabel olecho shamto, or accept upon yourself excommunication." And because your question is a question of ridicule, in other words, you are raising something that's impossible. Adhochi also hahu gavra. In the meantime, while Flimo was there asking Rebbe, a person comes in. Amale is yaled li yanuka the isle trei reishi. The father asks of Rebbe a question. He says, "I have a child that was just born that has two heads. Kamo bo'inon the mace of lekoyin. How much do I have to give to the koyin?" This is a reference to the money that a person under normal circumstances gives five sloim, the five pieces of silver, to the kohen for redeeming a firstborn male child. So he is asking, "My child has two heads. How much do I have to pay the kohen?" Also, hu sava tonale chayov litein lo asora sloim. Hahusava, it's an unnamed individual, well, simply referred to as an elderly sage, entered and said that you have to pay 10 sela. We pointed out a moment before that the standard payment for a normal child is 5 sela. Apparently, because of the two heads, he has to pay 10 sela. The Gemara asks, "Aini, is that so? That he has to redeem this kind of child at all?" V'hotani Rami Bar Chama. Rami Bar Chama offers the following Tanaic source. And in our marking system, as you may be familiar, we frame off or box off Tanaic sources so as to set them apart from the rest of the Gemara text. So he quotes a source in which the drosha appears that a child who is going to die, he may have been born and under normal birth circumstances, but is going to die, there is no mitzvah to redeem such a child. We will, of course, get into more details in a moment. So the question is also assuming that a two-headed child is not going to live, so that when the ruling was given that you have to redeem and pay 10 sela, why should there be any redemption whatsoever? So the source says, "Mitoch shenema podoi sifte es b'chor ha'odom." That's the pasuk referring to the redemption of a firstborn male child. Shomei ani afilu nitraf b'soich shloshim. Should I conclude that there is a mitzvah to redeem even a case where a child was killed within his first 30 days of life? We should have mentioned before maybe that redemption takes place when a child reaches age 30 days. So should I assume that there is a mitzvah, there's an obligation to redeem a child, even if he is killed within 30 days? Talmud Loimar, ach. The Pasuk says, ach. And that word ach that appears in the Pasuk is a minimizing expression. Cholok. Cholok means it is mimayit. It excludes certain situations, so that this situation of the child that was killed within 30 days, in fact, there is no mitzvah of redemption. So the question, or the psak of Hahu Sava was that there is redemption, and we are assuming in this question that the two-headed baby is not going to live. So the Gemara answers, Shaini Hocha, the case of the two-headed baby that the Hahu Sava said you have to redeem, well, that's different than what the Braisa was referring to. The Begulgeles Tola Rachmona. The mitzvah of redemption is totally on the head. The point is that if a child goes beyond 30 days, there is that the obligation to redeem kicks in. Why? Because the Torah obligates the redemption of a child per head, so to speak. So that if you have a child, in this case with two heads, that happens to have lived beyond 30 days, there is an obligation to redeem. It is true that if a child is killed within 30 days, and one may have thought, well, if he wouldn't have been killed, it would have lived, being that it was basically a healthy child and would have lived beyond 30 days. The chiddush of the posuk is that since it did not make it to 30 days, even though in potential it would have lived past 30 days, there is an exemption. There is a Rashi that you see on the second line from the top. Let's actually look at the Rashi on the first line from the top. Ach cholok. Ach podo sifteh. Rashi is quoting the posuk in which the word ach appears. And we said ach was a minimizing expression. The hai nami, the two-headed baby, kenitraf domi. It's like nitraf, nitraf being something that was killed. Why is it like that? Share lo yichyeh, it's not going to live. The next Rashi, begogolus tola rachmona, lepidyon haben, the mitzvah pidyon haben is based on the head. Dichtiv chomesh shkolim legogolus. That's what the pasuk says, and gogolus is a reference to the head or the skull. V'hai islay trei. The psak case where the Hahu Sava ruled that you pay 10, it happens to have two heads. The im yishum ach cholok, and if you're concerned with the drosha of ach, which excludes, that's true, but hashto miho lo mis, but in this case, it hasn't died yet, the two-headed baby that the Hahu Sava ruled on. What's interesting then when you take an overview of this particular piece of Gemara, Flimo asked a question concerning tefillin on a two-headed baby, or a two-headed child. Two-headed child, he's not a baby, he's reached 13. Rebbe reacted to this question with a sense of being upset. In other words, that the question was unfounded. The Hashgacha seemed to have it that a case of a two-headed baby came right at that moment. On the surface of things, Rebbe's reaction indicated that there couldn't be such a thing as a two-headed baby. And then the Hashgacha had it that a question of an actual question of that having happened came to the fore. On the other hand, though, it could still very well be, there could still be room for Rebbe's reaction in that who is to say that an individual with two heads would ever live that long to the point that they would put on two tefillin. It's also important to issue a type of disclaimer here. And when we speak about a two-headed baby, we're not talking about Siamese twins in the conventional sense. What may very well be is a case of an individual who's from neck down is a singular individual, whereby we're not talking about a case of a freak birth where there are several sets of organs or double sets of organs below the neck, because one could actually say there are cases on record of such individuals. But if you want to be true to the issue at hand, one would want to investigate the issue concerning an individual that has pure one set of organs and two heads. That situation is very likely the situation that Rebbe was reacting to. The comments that we made in the last couple of minutes are simply designed to, we'll say, caution the one from reaching any immediate reactions to a piece of Gemara based on stories reported in magazines and the media in general, and coming to conclusions from those kind of stories to things that one sees in the Gemara. Let us now continue in the Gemara. The second line from the top, Omar Mar, Yodcha, Zu Kiboris. You'll notice that we have an arrow to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text indicating Omid Aleph. That arrow on Omid Aleph will point to the line where this quote is coming from. So the source on Omid Aleph had said that the Tefillin Shel Yad is put on the bicep. Minolon. From how do you know that Yodcha means the bicep? Before going on in the Gemara, we have some new geometric forms that we want to discover their role, and we will accomplish that by looking at the outside margin under our Nosei Mivne heading. You'll notice there is a diamond featured, and the diamond is found on our page. There are two of them. You can see the second one about a third of the way down from the top of the page. And in our explanation on the outside margin, we say Shnei Brisos, two Tanaic sources. And you can see they're both framed in the Gemara text. These are two Tanaic sources, the Mikum Hanochas Tfilin, regarding the location, Mikum, the location of the Tfilin. Number one, Shel Yad, Al Hakiboris, that we mentioned that the Tfilin Shel Yad goes on the bicep. And the second source will deal with the Shel Roish, Begoiva HaRoish, Velo Beinu Anayim Mamish. The second source will say that the Tefillin Shel Roish goes on the top of the head, so to speak, and not, even though the Pasuk says, Ulotoy Tofois Bein Einecha, the Pasuk itself speaks about the Tefillin being between one's eyes. Nevertheless, through the strength or the power of the oral law, the Torah Sheba'al Peh, we will discover not to take the Pasuk literally. And that will be the discussion later on. We will also see a double underline being used. And many times in our marking system, we use marking simply to show the balance in structure or the repetitious style. In this case, you can see in the first Tanaic source, the conclusion of Zu Goiva Shebiyad, that's double underline, and then source number two, you see Zu Goiva Sheberosh, that means the high part of the head. That's also double underline. So now that you have an overview of the upcoming Gemara, the two Tanaic sources, the first one dealing with the placing of the tefillin on the arm and its location, and the second source dealing with the location of the tefillin Shel Rosh. So we now read the Gemara. The Tanu Rabbanan, the Tanaic source begins, Al Yodcha, Zu Goiva Shebiyad. That's the high part of the arm. Ata Omer Zu Goiva Shebiyad, O Eino Ela Al Yodcha Mamish, maybe it means on the palm of your hand. We see a number one, because in this source we will notice actually we'll number up to three responses to this to, let's say, three rejections to this possibility that it would mean that the tefillin shel-yad are placed on one's palm of the hand, one's hand, literally. When we say palm of the hand, we're referring to the area below the wrist. So how do we know not to... maybe we should even say, beyond that, anything below the elbow is what we are excluding. So how do you know that it doesn't mean on one's hand, literally? So, number one, Omrot Torah, Hanoch Tfilin Biyad, V'Hanoch Tfilin Barosh. The Pasuk talks about the placing of tefillin on one's yad, one's arm, and on one's head. Ma'ala halon begoiva shebarosh, just like in the case of tefillin shel rosh, it's on the upper part of the head. And this is an assumption right now, which will have to be discussed later. But as far as this source is concerned, that is a given. That just like the tefillin shel rosh is put on the high part of the head, af kan, so too with regard to the shel yad, begoiva shebiyad, on the high part of the arm. We mentioned earlier in our shiur today that we're not talking about high, meaning in terms of from ground measured up till ceiling high part of the body, but rather we're talking about an outstretched arm and the muscle structure, so that the highest part of an outstretched arm, muscle-wise, that's the bicep. So, just like in the case of Rosh, it's on the high part, so too in the case of the arm, it's on the high part, which is the bicep. Number two, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Eino Tzarech. You don't need that approach. Hare hu Omer, we have another approach. V'hoya l'cho l'ois. That's what the Pasuk says regarding the tefillin shel yad. It shall be unto you as a sign. And the unto you is a personal type of expression. L'cho l'ois v'loi l'achirim l'ois. Something visible, or let's say something only you would know about and not the public. What do we mean by that? If the tefillin were worn on one's arm, on one's hand, on the below his wrist, for example, that is a part of the body that's always exposed. If it's worn on the bicep, though, that's a part of the arm that, generally speaking, is one has a sleeve of his a shirt or his coat, so it's covered. For whom then is the tefillin shel yad serving as a sign of covenant between the Almighty and the people of Israel? It is serving as a sign only for you on a personal, because it's in a place that's otherwise not visible to the public. As a result of L'chol L'os, so Rabbi Lezer understands that it's a reference to the placing of the tefillin on a covered part of the arm, namely the bicep. Number three, Rabbi Yitzchok Omer, Eino Tzorech. You don't need that approach either. Harehu Omer, v'santem es devorai eila arul levavachem ukshartem. And that pasuk is a reference to the tefillin shel yad. It says you shall place them opposite your heart and bind them to your arms. Ukshartem leos al yadachem. Shetehe simo keneged halev. The placing, the v'santem, in this pasuk is the placing of the tefillin shel yad keneged halev, on a part of the body that's opposite one's heart. And that, of course, is the upper part of the arm, the bicep, to the exclusion, of course, of something lower. Rabbi Chiya brei d'Rav Avya, v'Rav Acha brei d'Rav Avya, mechavenu monach lei lahadei libei. They were careful to put the tefillin opposite the tefillin shel yad, opposite the heart. Rav Ashi havi Yosef kamei da meimar. Rav Ashi was seated in the presence of a meimar. Havi tziria biyodei v'komis chazion tefillin. A meimar apparently had an injury to his arm, to his upper part of his arm, and as a result of the injury, the garment that he was wearing had to be slit open so there would be no pressure on the injury. As a result of the garment being slit open, the tefillin that he was wearing were visible. That's v'chom mischazion. The word mischazion, the shorish, the root of that word is chazi, to see. So it means, in this case, it means the tefillin were visible to others through the rip in his garment. Omar lei, so Rav Ashi asked, lo sovar lo mar, lo chol ois velo lachirim ois, do you not hold from the drosha that we saw just above in the Brisa, and we saw that under Rabbi Eliezer's name, And you'll notice the little arrow that we have to the left-hand side of the Gemara text, indicating where this was cited above. You'll notice a little arrow to the left-hand side of the Gemara text above, from where this quote is coming from. So, do you not hold from that it's supposed to be for you and not to be seen by others? Amale, so Amemar answers, B'mokoim l'choli ois itmar. The drasha that we saw, for you and not for others, is simply a direction as to where it is to be placed. It's to be placed on the part of the arm that, in general, is not seen by others. So as a result of that, the fact that in my case it's open, it doesn't contradict that drasha. That drasha was simply telling you location, where the tefillin should be placed. Physically, where should they be placed? They should be placed on a part of the arm that, in general, is covered. Notice there is a little star to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. Gova Shibarosh Minolon. In order to see where this quote is coming from, you scan up the page, and you'll see in the source at the upper part, where you see the star also to the right-hand side of the Gemara text, at that point, we had mentioned that the source was making an assumption that the tefillin shorosh are placed on the high part of the head. Here, the Gemara will investigate that. Goyva shebarosh minolon. From where do you know that the tefillin shorosh are placed on the upper part of the head, and certainly to the exclusion of the area between one's eyes? So, the Tana Rabbanan, we have a Tanaic source, and as we pointed out, this diamond is a number 2 to the diamond mentioned above. Here we're dealing with location of tefillin shel harosh. The pasuk says, Bein Einecha, Zu Goiva Shebarosh. That's a reference to the top of the head, the high part of the head. Atomer Zu Goiva Shebarosh O Eino Elo Bein Einecha Mamish. You notice the squiggle underline under the expression O Eino Elo. We often use a squiggle underline in our Gemara markings when alternatives are presented. In this case, we have on the one hand Goiva Shebarosh, we have an alternative presented, Bein Einecha Mamish, meaning between the eyes literally. So maybe that's what Bein Einecha means. So to this we answer. Now we have a little one over here, because this will be the first of two responses to this particular question. The Gemara, the Brisa answers, Nemar kan Bein Einecha, v'nemar lahalon loy sosimu korcho Bein Einechem lemeis. There is a posuk later on that speaks about the prohibition of ripping out one's hair as a sign of exasperation upon the death of an individual. That's lo sosimu korcho bein einechem lemeis. In that pasuk, you see the expression bein einechem, similar to the pasuk, to the expression by tefillin. Now, in the case of the iser korcha, ma lahalon begoiva shebarosh, just like over there, when you talk about ripping out the hair, what hair are you talking about? You're talking about where there is hair, and that is on the top of the head. So just like over there, the bein einechem is really a part of the head that is gova shebarosh, mokoim she'oisa korcha, a place that one could talk about korcha is a bald spot. By ripping out the hair, one would leave a bald spot. So just like over there, bein einechem is a reference to the part of the head that one can speak about a bald spot. Afkan, so too, when it comes to tefillin shorosh, begoiva shorosh, mokoim she'oise korcha. The placing of the tefillin is to be put on a spot of the head that, in theory, could be made into a bald spot. And that, of course, is the top of the head, as opposed to between one's eyes. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Eino Tzorech. He has a different approach. You don't need the approach we just took. Rather, Omro Torah, Hanoch Tfilin Biyad, Hanoch Tfilin Barosh. The Torah speaks about placing the tefillin on one's hand and on one's head. Ma lahalon, just like by the hand, b'mokom haroi l'tomei b'nega echod, afkan b'mokom haroi l'tomei b'nega echod. Just like the arm is a part of the body that, if one were afflicted with negoyim is is oftentimes referred to by the term tsaras. In the parsha of tsaras, there is a type of tsaras that afflicts flesh, and a type of tsaras that afflicts hair, parts of the body where there's a concentration of hair. In the case of the flesh, we speak about the appearance of a se'ar lavon. In the case of the head, we speak about the appearance of a se'ar tzahov. We don't have to get into any detailed descriptions of these different kinds of negoyim. Suffice it to say that a nega on the head is a nega on flesh is characterized by se'ar lavon, and a nega on the rosh is characterized by se'ar tzahov. So we also know that the pasuk compares yad to rosh. Just like on the yad, only one type of nega is appropriate, so to speak, or is feasible, and that's se'ar lavon. So too, when it comes to the rosh, we're talking about a part of the head where only one type of nega would be applicable, namely the se'ar tzahov. And the Gemara points out this idea of a place on the head where only one nega would be applicable, that is la'afuke bein einecha. That's to the exclusion of the area between the eyes, literally, because the area between the eyes, you have there flesh and hair from the eyebrows. De'iko basar, ve'iko se'ar. The area of between the eyes, literally, is not comparable to the arm, because the area between the eyes, you have flesh and hair. De'iko se'ar lavon, ve'iko nami se'ar tzahov. In that part of the body, the area between the eyes, two kinds of negoyim are applicable. And as a result of that, it would not be similar to the arm. And yet the Torah parallels head to arm. Therefore, when we speak about a location on the head, it cannot possibly be the area between the eyes, literally. At this point, the Gemara now starts the topic of tzitzis. This topic of tzitzis will carry over into the fourth perek as well. The Mishnah on the Chof Ches Amud Aleph said, Arba tzitzis ma'akvoiz zu ezu, sh'arba osan mitzvah achas. The presence of four tzitzis, four corners having tzitzis on it, is binding. And the reason that they are binding one upon the other is because they all form one mitzvah. So if you're missing any of the elements, you are lacking the mitzvah. The Mishnah went on to say, Rabbi Shmuel Oimer, Arba Osan, Arba Mitzvahs. The four corners represent four separate mitzvahs. The Gemara opens up with a question, Mai Binayu, and Rashi explains, what is the difference between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Shmuel? After all, both agree that a four-cornered garment needs to have each corner with tzitzis in it. So what difference does it make whether you classify it as four separate mitzvahs or one mitzvah? As we look on in the Gemara, we notice a new geometric form as far as this omid is concerned, as far as this sugi is concerned. We see triangles. They are explained in the outside margin under the Nosei Mivne heading. The triangles, which number in this case three of them, they are three tshuvos, three responses, la she'ilo, to the question, Mai binayu, bein Tanakhama v'Rabbi Shmuel, I dalet tzitzis mitzvah achas, oi dalet mitzvahs. Three responses to the question of what difference is there between the two approaches of the Tanoim in the Mishnah. Omar Rav Yosef, Sodin Bitzitzis Iko Binayu. This is an example of a very, very abbreviated piece of Gemara. You really need the Rashi to make heads or tails out of this particular response. Sodin Bitzitzis. Sodin is a reference to linen. Linen, which is something made from the flax plant, linens, and tzitzis, let's say the Torah concept of tzitzis involves wool, involves with the tchelis, the blue string that's part of the traditional Torah intended tzitzis, is a string made of wool that's dyed with the tchelis dye. So for on a simple level, tzitzis, let us say one had a linen garment. If he had a linen garment, he is going to be adding to the corners of the linen garment tzitzis, which involve wool. Now, wool and linen, many of you probably know, it gets involved with the problem of shatnez. It is okay, it's Torah permitted to have a shatnez set up when you're dealing with tzitzis. That's not the issue at hand. What is the issue, though, is what happens if you have a garment that's made of linen and does not have all four corners with tzitzis in it. Is that okay? So, according to the Tanakhama that says that the four corners represent one mitzvah. So, let's say one corner is missing the tzitzis. So you have three corners with tzitzis, the fourth corner missing. And it's a linen garment, and the three corners have woolen tzitzis in it. According to the Tanakhama, since it's not a complete mitzvah, you are not fulfilling the mitzvah whatsoever, and therefore there will be a problem of kilayim or a problem of shatnez, as shatnez with garments, kilayim of garments is referred to by the term shatnez. Kilayim, of course, is something of mixed breeding other things as well, but in the case of garments, kilayim of garments is called shatnez. Rabbi Shmuel, on the other hand, says there is no aveira. Why not? Because each corner is a separate mitzvah, and when it comes to tzitzis, the Torah makes allowance for shatnez. So since each corner is a separate mitzvah, separate fulfillment, it's okay, even if only three of the four corners have tzitzis in it. Once again, but according to the Tanakhama, since all four form a singular unit, if you're missing one corner, then you're missing the mitzvah, and you're left with a non-mitzvah shatnez garment. And that would be a problem. The next approach, Rovo Bar Ahino. This is number two, Omar. Talis Balas Chomesh Iko Binayu. A garment that has five corners to it. That example, an example of a garment with five corners, would represent a point of difference. So, how does this work? According to the Tanakhama that says the four represent a single mitzvah, the mitzvah of tzitzis is to have a garment. Even if it has more than four corners, you're supposed to have four corners with tzitzis, and that's it. The truth is that the Torah is marbe, includes a five-cornered garment also as being chayev in tzitzis. All that means is that if you have a five-cornered garment, it too is required in tzitzis. But how many? Four corners. According to Rabbi Shmuel, that each corner is a separate mitzvah, and the Torah includes a five-cornered garment as being shayach, as being relevant to the mitzvah of tzitzis, you will put an additional tzitzis in the fifth corner, each corner being a separate mitzvah. Ravina, the Gemara goes on with a third response to the question of my binayu. So Ravina says, Ravina Omar, de Rav Huna iko binayu. The teaching of Rav Huna will be a point of difference. Let us point out, even before we read any further in the Gemara, Rashi points out, everyone agrees with the principle of Rav Huna. The point of difference will be an application that's relevant to Rav Huna's teaching. Let's go on in the Gemara before any further explanation. The Omar Rav Huna, Hayotze Betalis, She'eno Mitsuyetzes, Kihilchaso B'Shabbos, Chayov Chatos. One who goes from his home to the public thoroughfare, that's called Hoitza, or going from one domain to another with a garment that is tzitzist. I'm simply groping for a verb for the expression of putting tzitzis on, so we will coin the phrase tzitzist. In this case, if a person goes out with a garment, let's, before going into this case, but let's say that a person went out with a type of garment that has tzitzis on it, but they were put on under in a situation or under circumstances that everyone would agree is puzzle, is unfit. So in such a case, everyone will agree that you are, in effect, carrying the tzitzis out on the garment in a non-mitzvah fashion. And as a result of that, there would be a violation, a Shabbos violation. But here, we're talking about a situation that not everyone would say is a puzzle insertion of the tzitzis. If we focus now on a case of a garment that has four corners, and he put tzitzis only into three of the corners. According to the Tanakhama, that you are not mekayim the mitzvah unless you have all four corners with tzitzis. So you now have a case of tzitzis mitzuyatzis shelo kilchasa. It's with tzitzis improperly. As a result of that, there is a Shabbos violation. And if one were to wear a garment made of four corners with three corners alone, only three of the four having tzitzis in it, if he walked out like that on Shabbos, he would have to bring, if he did so unwittingly, he would have to bring a korban chatos. Rabbi Shmuel, on the other hand, that says each corner is a separate mitzvah, so he hasn't violated Shabbos, because if one is wearing tzitzis properly, that's considered an article of clothing. Each corner being considered a separate mitzvah, he has done nothing wrong insofar as Shabbos is concerned. So, as we see, according to Ravina, the principle behind Rav Huna's teaching will be a point of difference, and that principle being the issue of Shabbos violation. And to focus in, just for the sake of review, to focus in the case is a four-cornered garment with three of the four corners with tzitzis. According to the Tanakhama, that's an improper situation because all four represent one mitzvah. The lacking of one of the four ruins the mitzvah, and therefore you're not wearing a properly tzitzis garment. Therefore, there is a Shabbos violation. According to Rabbi Shmuel, each corner being a separate mitzvah, since you're in fulfillment of the mitzvah tzitzis, you are not thereby violating Shabbos. The Gemara goes on, and we see a new geometric form. Therefore, let us refer to our Nosei Mivne heading, in which we see an explanation to these new shapes. The new shape here is a house shape. And in our you can see in the outside margin our Nosei Mivne heading, we have written Gimel Dugmos, three examples, Shel Shinuyim Bebeged, three examples of changes made into a garment. We're going to work with a standard four-cornered garment, and the Gemara will feature changes in the garment. And in each one of these examples, we will end up saying that the changes do not alter the status of the garment with regard to a tzitzis obligation. The Gemara. Omar Rav Shisho Breder of Idi, Haiman de Batsrei Leglime, Loi Ovid Veloi Klum. Batsrei is literally to reduce. In this case, we have a four-cornered garment that the owner of which came and snipped off a corner of the garment in a diagonal, making it in effect into a five-cornered garment. And the Gemara says, Shavyo Talis Balas Chomesh, he made it into a five-cornered garment. And as we saw earlier, based on the Rashi, which is based on a Gemara later on, the Torah is marbe five-cornered garments in being obligated in tzitzis. So that even though he cut off one of the corners, cut off in a diagonal, changing the shape of the garment, he has not changed the status of the garment with regard to tzitzis. And we have some humble artwork that accompanies this. The artwork, as we've described in some of our previous recordings, is impressionist art, and the term impressionist is because this is the impression of the author as to what this may look like. And we cannot take full responsibility for the accuracy of these drawings. Therefore, it's upon each participant in the listening of these recordings to verify their accuracy. So the impressionist diagram of this case, you can see on the inside margin where there's a singular star, and we've entitled that Debatsrei Leglimo. And in that diagram, you can see that there's the lower part of that picture has a dashed line in a diagonal, and what you see illustrated here is a garment with four corners, original four corners with tzitzis on it, and he then cut off one of the corners, and where the arrows are pointing, that represents Kronos Chadoshos, new corners that are formed. They're true, they're not 90 degree corners, but they are angles all the same. The Gemara goes on with a second illustration of change in garment. Omar Rav Mashar Shehaiman Detzairei Leglime Lo Avad Velo Klum. Before going on, let's take advantage of the illustration that's appropriate for this. It may be pointed out that the following illustration will be appropriate for the third case as well in the Gemara. So for the time being, let us look at the illustration. You see a folded garment. Originally, this garment was twice as long. And as you can see, it's been folded over, and you see tzitzis that are placed. What we want to focus on are the tzitzis that are and what in effect is the fold. We can describe the fold as the new corners that are formed as a result of it having been folded over. The garment is also, in this case, the word tzairei. This is the second case. Tzairei means tied shut, or in Rashi suggests also, or like glued shut, whereby the garment is not only folded, but is also tied shut, so to speak, tied in its folded form. And we have a little illustration indicating where the head would go. That circle in the middle is the place for the head, where you put it over your body and wear it. The question right now is the tzitzis that are placed in the corners, is that in the corners at the fold, is that legitimate? So Rav Mishashia says that it's not legitimate, and that his folding it over and tying it shut, so to speak, doesn't change the original garment. And why is that? So the Gemara says on the second wide line, my time, why do you say it's lo avad v'lo klum? He has done nothing, he's accomplished nothing. De keman de sharia domi. It's as if it's untied. It's as if it's still loose. Utna nami, we have a legal precedent for this idea in the following Tanaic source. Before we learn the source, we have to say a word about the topic. The topic we're about to expose ourselves to has to do with Tumas Kelim, vessels and their ability to receive Tuma. When you deal with leather vessels, a leather vessel will mekabel Tuma only if it has a base kibul. In other words, it can retain something, it can hold something. What is a base kibul? A classic case of a base kibul would be a cup. You fill the cup up with water, it retains the water. If you have a standard jug, a leather jug, will hold water, will hold liquid that you put into it. Let's say the jug essentially would be something that looks like a sleeve or a cylinder. And you took this cylinder made of leather and you knotted it. Well, since you knotted it, you made a knot in it, you made a knot in one end of it, it will now hold stuff. You can pour liquid in it and it'll hold it. Is a jug, a leather jug, that's formed by knotting a cylindrical piece of leather, by knotting it shut, is that mekabel tumah? Will that be capable of receiving tumah, of absorbing tumah? As we mentioned before, kalim are mekabel tumah if they have a base kibble. If they don't have a base kibble, when we, of course, certain materials, it doesn't. Not, we're not talking across the boards, we're talking right now about leather. If it, the leather article does not have a base kibble, it's not mekabel tumah. And notice this source. Utna nami, it says, kol chamsos hatsruros. Chamsos are the jugs that are made into a jug by tsruros, by tying one end shut. Tahoros, they're not mekabel tumah. Why are they not mekabel tumah? Because even though it's tied shut, it's viewed in our mind's eye as if it's untied, and therefore without a base kibble. So even though temporarily it has a base kibble, it is not viewed as such, and therefore tahoros, not mekabel tumah. And we use that to explain, or we apply that to the case of the garment that was tied in a folded fashion. The knotting there is of no consequence, and therefore, in the case of the garment where the tzitzis were placed in the fold, it's viewed as unfolded in your mind's eye. And where are your tzitzis? They're right in the middle of the garment. In other words, two of your four tzitzis come out in the middle of the garment, and hence that's not the mitzvah. The source adds, chutz mishel arvayim, with the exception of Arabian jugs, the Arabic jugs were in fact made of pieces of leather that were originally cylindrical. They were knotted shut, but their knots were of a permanent nature. That's the way they made all of their jugs, and as a result of that, that is considered a base kibble. But we don't want to emphasize the case of the arvayim because the Gemara was citing the Tanakama as the basis of our analysis. Omar of Dimi Minahardo, Haiman de Chaite Leglime, Lo Avan Velo Klum. The Chaite is he sewed the folded garment shut. So you can see in the diagram that we have, that we referred to before, the folded over garment. We also have a little arrow pointing to the point at the bottom of the diagram where we said Madbiko. That would apply to the second example from Asharshia's case, where he glues it shut, or Otofro, where he sews it shut. That's Chaite, that's the word here. Chaite meaning he sewed it closed. And yet, we say Lo Avad Velo Klum. That accomplishes nothing. Im Esau, if it were so, the Lo Miboyele, that he doesn't want such a long garment, and that's why he supposedly sewed it shut, Lifsok Felishday, he should have simply cut it in half and thrown away the piece that he doesn't want. The fact that he did not cut off the excess garment, he simply folded it over and sewed it shut, shows us he is still interested in the original length, and therefore the placing of the tzitzis in the fold would not be legitimate. Rabbi Shmuel Omer Arba Osam Arba Mitzvahs. Omer of Yehuda Omer Shmuel Halacha Kerebi Yishmoel. He wants to rule like Rabbi Yishmoel, and in doing so, you have to look back at the triangled section of Gemara for seeing the practical application of what does it mean if you rule like Rabbi Yishmoel. And yet, the Gemara says, "V'les hilchus hakavosei." The Gemara itself does not want to accept the ruling of Rav Yehuda Mar Shmuel, and hence rejects that. Ravino haviko ozil abasre demor barav Ashi b'shabato deriglo. Ravino was walking behind Mor barav Ashi on a Shabbos, shabato deriglo. Rashi explains it's the Shabbos that's in the vicinity of a holiday in which we darshan the halachas of the holiday. So, and according to Rashi's explanation, it could be that the Shabboses that are within a month before the holiday, one already, the rabbi of that community would hold forth a public drosha on regarding the rules of the halachas of the upcoming Yontif. So there was a story here involving Ravina, who was walking behind Mar Barav Ashi on that Shabbos. Ifsik Karna Dechute, the corner of Mar Barav Ashi's garment got ripped off. Now we have a Roman numeral number 1 over here. On the outside margin we have a Nosei Mivneh. These Roman numerals are featured. They represent Shnei Lishonos, two versions, B'maisa, regarding this incident, Shnikra B'Shabbos Echod, Shnikra B'Shabbos Echod Mikarnes Bigdoi Shomar Bravashi, where one of the corners of Mar Bravashi's garment got ripped off. We're talking about a four-cornered garment. One of the corners with its tzitzis got ripped off. Ha'im ha'yotzorech lahoyri bigdo. Is there any necessity of his removing the garment? So the story continues. Version number 1 is velo omar le velo midi. Ravina, who was walking behind Mar Bravashi, who noticed this, didn't point it out to Mar Bravashi. Kadmoto le beise. When he arrived home, when Mar Bravashi got home, Omar lay, so Ravino said, Mehosam ifsik, you know, back there on the street, your garment got ripped. Omar lay, and Mar Bravashi says back, E amris li mehosam, shadise. If you would have told me to take it off, over there, I would have taken off the garment. Because we don't paskin like Rabbi Shmuel. We paskin like the Tanakhama. And the Tanakhama says that all four are one mitzvah. And therefore, if one of the tzitzis are ripped off, so the garment becomes, is now improperly tzitzist. We should point out, for the sake of accuracy, in this particular story, when it mentioned that his ifsik karna dechute, four lines from the bottom, the Rashi points out it's the karna dechute is the tzitzis. The tzitzis got ripped off. So he had a four-cornered garment that one of the corners was lacking tzitzis. Mar Bravashi therefore points out, had you told me earlier, I would have taken off the garment because I'm now, I can't continue wearing such a thing that's in violation of Shabbos. The Gemara asks, Vaho Omar Mor, but has it not been taught, Godol Kovan Abriyas Shedoiches Loisasa Shebetorah, that the honor that is due to a human being is very important and is so important that it cancels or supersedes a negative command in the Torah. Now, in asking this question, we're asking on Mar Bravashi's reaction. Mar Bravashi said, hey, you know, if you would have told me over there, I would have taken off the garment. Now, a person walking unclothed is certainly a violation of Kavod HaBrios. So Mar Bravashi was saying, I would have taken off the garment anyway. To that, the Gemara asks, what do you mean he would have taken off the garment? Is there not a concern called Kavod HaBrios, which supersedes Lo Sasa Shebetorah? And we're assuming right now the Lo Sasa Shebetorah would include Shabbos as well, which is a negative command that one should not violate the precepts and halachas and malachas of Shabbos. But nevertheless, Kavod HaBrios is more important. The Gemara answers, Tirguma. It's explained that that lo saseh that is pushed off, Tirgumo Rav Bar Shva Kameid Rav Kahana, Rav Bar Shva explained this idea of Kavod HaBrios pushing off a lo saseh Shebetorah, that's Balav Deloy Sosur. To keep matters simple, the Lav of Lo Sosur is a mitzvah in the Torah that one must heed the teaching of the Rabbonan. So that every din de rabbonan comes under the umbrella of loy sosur. There is a negative command not to violate rabbinic teachings. So it's true that Kavod HaBrios will overrule a rabbinic teaching. For example, there's a mitzvah de rabbonan, a negative command not to metaltail stones on Shabbos. Stones being a problem of muktzah, which is an issa de rabbonan. However, let us say there's an issue of Kavod HaBrios that confronts Muktza. An example of that would be, let us say, a matter of cleanliness, of some hygienic consideration, and one, by using the stones, would be able to clean himself from unwanted material that's clinging to one's body. One would be allowed to use the stone to remove the undesirable material clinging to one's body, so that he shouldn't, so the person shouldn't appear to, in the public, in a disparaging fashion. That's an example of Kavanah Briah is being doicha the lav shebetorah, the lav of lo sosur, which is the lav which tells me you shall not violate the teachings of the Rabbanan. But if there's a question of Kavanah Briah, you are able, it's the Kavanah Briah supersedes this particular lav. However, the Kavanah Briah does not supersede the Isser of Hoitzah B'Shabbos. And as a result of that, Mar Rav Ashi remains steadfast in his having said that I would have removed the garment, because here they're dealing with a Shabbos issue, and Kavanah Briah, the fact that I would be unclothed, would not be a serious enough consideration to allow a Shabbos violation. Ve'ika d'amri. Now we have another version of the same story. Mehosam Omar Le. In fact, Ravina pointed out to Mar Rav Ashi, hey, you know, you're in the street. He said, your tzitzis just got ripped off. The Omale, and Mar Rav Ashi reacts, my daitoch. What are you telling me this for? The Mishdei. Do you think that you're telling me this so that I should take off my clothing? The Omar Mar, but it has been taught. Godol Kavanah Briah Shedeches Leisas Shebetorah. Greater is the consideration of the honor due to a human being, that it's so great is that consideration that it pushes off, it supersedes a negative command in the Torah. And as a result of Kavanah Briah, my honor is more important than a lo sas shebet Torah, which is a reference to Shabbos. Therefore, I wouldn't have, even if you are trying to tell me right now that my tzitzis are ripped off with an expectation that I'm going to take off my clothing, I am not going to do that. To this, the Gemara asks, "But v'hot tirguma Rav Bar Shvo, kamed Rav Kana belav de lo sosur." How can you say you're not going to take off your garment? You have to take off your garment. Ah, that Kavanah Briah supersedes a lo sase. It supersedes a lo sase of lo sosur alone, where you're dealing with a din d'rabbanan, a rabbinic teaching. But we're right now we're dealing with a Torah teaching, the violation of Shabbos. So you do have to take off your garment. So the response now on behalf of Mar Rav Ashi, Hachanami, the case that we are dealing with right now, with my being in the street, so to speak, Carmelis, the Rabbonan he. It's not a public thoroughfare which involves one with a Torah-level violation of Shabbos. We're dealing with a Carmelis, which is a rabbinic area, a rabbinic domain, and as a result of that, being that this the issue of the transfer carrying in carrying on Shabbos, which is a Shabbos problem, you're dealing with a rabbinic Shabbos problem, and as a result of that, the Kavanah Briah is doche that, and the fact that you're telling me right now that my tzitzis got ripped off, I am not going to take off my garment because I'm in a Carmelis. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.